This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I did just wolf down some food, so my throat might be a little clogged up, but we'll be fine.
It's an immune system to respond to a piece of a virus.
I'm going to talk about that in a minute because I've heard about all of these pieces, but this sums up all the pieces. We'll get back to that in a minute. Things are still puttering along in January. January is always an interesting month because not only do we close late for December because there's so many extra donations and things that come in, then we have to turn around. We have a whole bunch of start of year stuff, and so we're just going. We're going. Trying to get all that done, and so it's interesting. So work is good. Getting stuff done at work, getting things taken care of. Writing is good. I'm behind this week because my new computer came in on Sunday, and so I had to stop and set that up, which pretty much blew the whole day on Sunday, so of course I'm behind, but technically I'm not really behind because I had gotten so far ahead on book 22. I was 9 months or 90,000 words in as opposed to 80,000, so I got a little extra slop, and I've got extra weeks in here in January and February, so we're good. And we're going on vacation second week in February, which means there's going to be long stretches of days in there when I'm going to be able to just sit and write. So I'm not concerned at all. Writing is fine. The costumes are going fine. I love having breakfast with friends because they hear ideas and give me ideas. I just looked down and realized that I didn't spin the microphones out like I normally do to get a more wide field. So we may not have as wide of a field on this recording as usual. And in fact, it might be backwards, but sorry, it's already going. That's the way it is. So I'm still working on Tell a Fairy Tale Day. That's coming along fine. It would be great to be a little farther along, but you know what? It's going to be fine. Working out all the details of the mechanics of how the puppet stage opens and like that and like that and like that, but we're getting there. We're getting there. Seems like everything there should work, so I think we'll be fine. And it's fun. It's going to be fun. So, anyways. So that's good. Then aside from that, you know, all is well. All is well. My life is just wonderful. It's just flat out wondrous. And how I know that it's wondrous is that I have good friends. I mean, just good friends. I was just in Walmart picking up some gloves for the costume tomorrow. I needed some work gloves, so I've got them. And I was talking to one of my friends who was doing the greeting, and you know, we were chatting about this, that, and the other, and one of my buddies, who I go on a walk with every month, who lives out near me, and so like the second Saturday, he swings over to my house and we go for a walk. I saw him heading out and I went, "Hey!" He turned around, immediately stopped, came back, and I introduced the two of them, and I said, "This is Dave, he's my good buddy." And then I was, I was just impressed again, and I told my friend that I was talking to there, I said, I just have such good friends. It's such a blessing. I have such good friends. And she said, "Oh, that's wonderful." And I was getting ready to leave, and I was heading out. And she said, by the way, I'm not here tomorrow. I said, what? And, you know, so I circled back around. She said, well, this is kind of weird. I said, no, it's fine, whatever. So tomorrow, personally, I consider this a wondrous story. Tomorrow is her and her husband's 15-year anniversary. And she confessed quite freely that it was also their 7-year anniversary since her infidelity and her drug use and her getting her life turned around. And she said, so it's 7 years, this is the year of Jubilee. And her husband told her, you know, this is the year of Jubilee. And because of this, and because you've been faithful to me these 7 years and I have forgiven you, I wish to take you as my wife and adorn you. And so they are, you know, following Old Testament examples that tomorrow he's going to take her and get her gold earrings and pierce her ears. And he's also going to get her a gold nose ring and pierce her nose. And she said, you know, some people have been saying, ooh, that's weird and that's... But, you know, that Middle Eastern thing, that's... And so it's a biblical thing because it comes out of that tradition. And I told her, I think that's glorious. I just think that's glorious. Because what you have is a restoration. You have forgiveness. You have the Holy Spirit making things whole. You have reunion. You have a rebuilding of a relationship that was broken. Forgiveness, joy, all the good things. I have really good friends. And I get to participate in their lives. And that's amazing. And frankly, it's probably in large part due to the costumes. Because through the costumes, I have sacrificed my time, my money, my energies to entertain and to bring joy. And through that, to bring an openness of spirit, that I've been able to create friendships where people are willing to share with me things that they might not share with everyone. I have good friends, and my life is rich. Okay, that's not what I was going to talk about today. What I was going to talk about today, I highly recommend that you listen to the Dark Horse podcast. It's on YouTube. It's on Spotify. I don't know how long it will be up on YouTube because this is the kind of subject matter that gets channels demonetized. But if it's still up on YouTube, look up the Dark Horse podcast and specifically... look for an episode. I don't know what it's called on YouTube, but it is the episode with Brent Weinstein and Dr. Toby Rogers. On Spotify, the name of the ads, the episode is Unsafe at Any Speed. Really interesting story. This is a young man who made the mistake of starting investigating. At the time, he was dating a young woman who had a son that had autism. And so he decided just to try to get up to speed on it. So he started doing some research. He was going to university at the time, so obviously he had access to tremendous materials. And he was just going to research it for a day, just to get his hands around what was happening, so he would know how to relate to the son of his girlfriend. And what he found immediately surprised him. And he said, as you know, as it went on, he became more and more interested in the topic, and he actually changed his doctoral dissertation to the political environment of autism, something like that. And he said, for your dissertation, you're not allowed to use any secondary sources. So he said, for instance, when I go out, if I go out to the CDC, I'm getting my mail. If I go out to the CDC and I read what they have to say about autism, those are all secondary sources because they are citing the original studies and drawing conclusions from the original studies. I have to draw my own conclusions, so I have to go back to all the original studies. So he did a tremendous amount of research on autism and came up with some very, very surprising things that are just glossed over. So the first stat, hopefully I have this correct because the number seems astronomical. Like in the last, whatever, several decades, autism, the cases of autism have grown by 27,000%. He said, you know, I think in the 60s that the incidences of autism were 1 in 10,000. And now they're 1 in 33. And he said, so, you know, he said, you go to the CDC and they will say things like, oh, it's probably because there has been a genetic mutation that's spreading among the populace. And so this is what's causing this. Brent Weinstein said, no, that's ridiculous. You know, based on what he knows of genetics, he said, it's impossible for something to spread genetically that quickly. He said, it's just impossible. It's not genetics. So another explanation is, well, we just measure it differently now. And that proves to be problematic as well. It's not a matter of you trying to measure it as well. It is, there has been an explosion in the incidences of autism. Okay, so if it's not genetic, it has to be environmental. And so he, you know, studied this for his doctoral dissertation, has since studied it more, and has since written a big book about all of this. And there have been studies done that show that in certain cases, you can have a family that's maybe living next to fields where pesticides are sprayed, that there can be an increased risk of autism of 45%. But while all those things contribute, there aren't enough people who live next to fields that are being sprayed with pesticides to cause a 27,000% increase in the rates of autism. And so one of the candidates has for years, there's been rumblings and rumors about it, is vaccines. And he went on to talk about the fact that, and Brent Weinstein talked about this as well, that Weinstein talked about this as well, that the original vaccines that were attenuated live viruses were a very clever hack. The apocryphal story is, because he didn't even know if it was true, he said, I would love this to be true, was that someone noticed that milkmaids didn't get smallpox nearly as often as others. What they tied that to was the fact that the milkmaids would often contract cowpox from the cows. But that's not nearly as virulent, and they would recover, and then because, in essence, they had been exposed to an attenuated virus that was not nearly as lethal, that then that gave them the immunity. And so that was the initial wave of vaccines were all attenuated live viruses. And those worked really well. But there was a certain danger in that if it wasn't attenuated enough, you could get the full-blown disease and die. So they decided to just use fragments, dead viruses, but the body is smart enough to sense that and just garbage collect them because it sees it's not alive. So then the decision was made, well, we need to put an adjutant in this to that just makes the body's immune system go crazy. And then if it's going crazy, it'll just attack everything. And it will attack the fragments of this virus that are in there. And then it will decide, oh, yeah, okay, I need to be vigilant for this. And then now you'll have a vaccine against a live virus. Problem is that there's no way to guide what the body attacks. So you stir up the body's immune system, it's going to go after a lot of things. Anything that causes any kind of inflammation, it's going to go after, and other things, which means that maybe explosions we've had in peanut allergies and nut allergies and all these things are related to these adjutants that are in the vaccines. In addition, when you had the Childhood Illness Act or something that Reagan signed into law that protected the pharmaceutical companies from being sued for side effects of vaccines because they said they're inherently dangerous. They're just inherently dangerous and we'll go out of, and then you won't have any vaccines because we'll just go out of business. So Reagan signed this bill that gave them immunity. Well, now you've given them immunity. And you've set up a system whereby according to this guy, for every new vaccine you can get on the child vaccine schedule, that's a money machine. And it will produce $2 billion of profits per year for your company that you cannot be held liable for any of the damage that the vaccines do. This is a problem. Because now apparently the child vaccine schedule is up to 80 plus vaccines. And all of them have some sort of adjutant in them because it doesn't work if you're using dead fragments of viruses without an adjutant. And the adjutants that it has is either mercury, which is less used now, or aluminum. And I'll just leave you with one more story because I have to get inside and help my wife get ready for small groups. So they needed a study to figure out whether or not aluminum was safe. According to this guy, the study that they did at the CDC and FDA, I think, to determine that vaccines were safe with this adjutant in them, aluminum, was they took four rabbits in New Zealand, I think, and injected them with aluminum adjutants. And then after 4 days, they killed the rabbits and investigating where the aluminum was. He said the first problem is you can't set up any sort of good scientific investigation with four cases. He said 30 is the absolute minimum, but they were happy to just do it on four rabbits. He said they actually lost the information on one of the rabbits. So now they're down to 3, but they decide they're just going to go ahead anyways. So there's no way to test if this has done any kind of brain damage to the rabbits. They didn't run them through mazes and then try to run them through mazes afterwards. They didn't do any of that. They just inject these rabbits with aluminum, and it doesn't kill them outright after 4 days. So they killed the rabbits. They investigate where the aluminum is, and they find it in all the worst places, you know, like liver, kidney, brain. Out of that trial, if what this guy says is correct, and he did his doctoral thesis on this, and he had to battle his professors every step of the way to get it published, but it was published. And he did get his doctorate. When every step of the way, all his professors tried to prove him wrong. So, having done this study on 4 rabbits, having lost the information on 1 rabbit, to take it down to 3 rabbits, having shown that, in fact, the aluminum was present in major organs and places where you probably didn't want heavy metals, the FDA and CDC, according to this guy, promptly declared that aluminum was safe for human beings. I mean, there you go. And then the pharmaceutical companies were happy to use it because they had this smoke screen they could stand behind to say, oh yeah, well, this is how it works, and it's a good thing because, you know, it will make the body react to the dead virus scraps, and then they'll get immunity. And then the pharmaceutical companies proceeded to crank up all sorts of investigations about all the things you need to be vaccinated for. And you go from just a few vaccines to over 80 being given to our children. And this guy is convinced that while there can be other ancillary causes for the increase, he is convinced that vaccines, in fact, have caused this epidemic of autism. He was talking about another person who had done extensive studies, because the stories that are told by parents, many of them are similar. Our child was developing, everything was fine, and then they went for a wellness check or they went for a doctor's visit and they got all these shots and everything started going downhill. Yeah. So this is going to be really interesting to see where we end up here. Because that second person that he referred to, who had tried to determine, when a child is developing fine and then comes down with autism, you know, they call that, I think he called it like regressive autism, where they had already developed certain skills and their abilities and they were moving forward, and then all of a sudden they become non-communicative and they lose emotional control and all the things. According to her estimates, on the low end, cases of autism for what she investigated, the low end seemed to be that there were 60% of autism cases that were regressive autism and as high as 84%. So a huge number of the autism cases that we are experiencing were regressive autism, which means it's not genetic. It's something environmental. So I would highly recommend that you watch this episode. It's on Dark Horse. And check earlier, because I've already shut everything off. Oh, wait, hang on a minute. Maybe I can get it here again. It's on Dark Horse. It's called, on Spotify, it's called Unsafe at Any Speed. It's Dr. Toby Rogers on the Dark Horse podcast with Brent Weinstein. It's worth listening to. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.